Hey, VBackLink family, it's Lily, and I was wondering if I could ask you a really quick favor. If the VBackLink has ever helped you, encouraged you, or taught you something along your birth after cesarean journey, I would be so grateful if you would vote for us for Best Podcast in NoCo Style's Best of NoCo Awards. As a Northern Colorado born and raised mama myself, this is especially meaningful for me. It takes less than a minute to vote, and we've linked it right in the show notes. Every vote helps more families discover the VBackLink, bringing more awareness to VBack education and support. Thank you so much for cheering on our little team. We appreciate you more than you know. So go to the show notes, click the link to vote, and then come back to this episode for another incredible episode.
Hey, you are listening to the VBackLink podcast. I'm your host today, Paige, and I'm joined by the always beautiful and lovely Lily. Hey.
Hey, girl. Hey. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you this week?
I am good. I am anxiously waiting on a baby, and I think this might be the most anxious I've ever been as a doula, and it's not even the latest baby I've ever had. I just am particularly attached to these humans and just really, we all go to church together too, so all of our church friends are asking us, like, has a baby been born yet? I literally just got a text that says, are you at the hospital? Like, no, you guys. I'm glad they're texting me and not this mom, but...
When we did our episode about long pregnancies and long labors, that was me just coming off of like my best friend's like being her doula and waiting a long time and like telling neighbors, y'all, come through me. Let's like, you'll know when we have the baby, like it's okay. Yeah. But then you feel it secondhand too, because it's just like.
Yeah, suddenly I feel nice. Like I'm having this baby.
Yes.
And so, yes, it'll be fun to look back on this and know when this little nugget was actually born.
But really, if you're there at the end of your pregnancy, those days feel so long, and we feel for you. Lily's feeling it for you right now.
I am. I'm having sympathy pains.
Yeah. Well, today we have Darby, and her episode will be one to listen to for inspiration. If you are in this season, if you're pregnant preparing, Darby is such a great example of pivoting, of patience, of endurance and fortitude, both mentally and physically, how to navigate providers. It is so jam-packed with incredible goodness. What are your immediate thoughts coming off of this episode, Lily?
I think it is rare that we are brave enough to speak up to providers without feeling like, oh, I have to do what they say. Like the power dynamic in the birth room is so real. And like Darby was brave enough to say something, to say no multiple times and to leave and go home. And just, I'm just so impressed with her.
Also, we didn't talk about this in the episode, but brave enough to switch from a doctor who has delivered two of your children before. And late in her pregnancy is when she switched. So there's just so much bravery, so much courage. We know that you will love it. And we're going to take a break for our intro and be back with Darby.
Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBackLink podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same, to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBackLink is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
Welcome back. We are here with Miss Darby. Thank you for joining us today. I will read her bio and then we will turn the time over to hear your amazing, incredible stories. Darby is married to her college sweetheart slash best friend and stays at home with their three beautiful babies. She's a foodie who loves working out, baking, reading, and spending time with her family. She was inspired by two specific friends to take on the challenge of a VBA2C, and she is so grateful for those two friends because now she hopes her story will inspire others in return. Darby's experience was wild and nerve-wracking, but by the grace of God, she had her successful BBA2C baby. Let's go.
Yay!
Okay, well,
we're
let's
so glad to have you,
Darby.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm so excited. I listened to literally over 30 hours of y'all, so I give y'all some credit for how I got here.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's dive right
in. So my first daughter was a C-section. She was breech, and I didn't know she was breech until 36 weeks. She was transverse the whole entire time. And then 36-week ultrasound, they were like, she's frank breech. You need a C-section. And they told me about the ECV procedure, and I just was, like, uneasy about it. Kind of made me nervous. The doctor kind of explained it in, like, an intimidating way. So I was like, C-section it is. So happened. It was good. Whatever. I didn't know any different. 9 months postpartum, I start working out again, get back in shape. And then I... And 14 months postpartum, and I get pregnant again, and I automatically just say I'll have a C-section again because my doctor was like, you've got a chance of rupture, because I talked about a VBAC for a second with her, but then I did not know what I know now. Otherwise, I would have redone that. If I could go back, I would have done that different. But I had a C-section with him, my second. So 24 months apart, their birthdays are 2 days apart. But then with him, I had really severe postpartum depression and just struggled mentally. My recovery was it was awful, kind of, with like my 2-year-old, and then it just wasn't good. And, but eventually I got better, and then I started working out again harder than ever and got in probably my best shape ever. And then I got pregnant 13 months postpartum, and which was a plan, but I was like, okay, I'm just gonna have a C-section again. Like, 3 is like, you can't do a VBAC now. We planned, and we got pregnant again. I was 13 months postpartum, and so I thought for sure C-section. But I started doing some research on like gentle C-section, because I really wanted like the baby laid on my chest, or I really wanted just different things, because my other 2 C-sections are just so medical and, you know, just like, I don't know, kind of a blur, because you're so drugged up and it's just kind of sad. I just didn't want that for my 3rd C-section. But then something in my head was like, maybe a VBAC. My husband was like, absolutely not. But then I was like, okay, maybe you're right. But then I had a friend who, I randomly saw that she just had a second VBA2C. And I was like, okay, that's pretty inspiring. And for her fourth child. And I was like, okay, that's cool. And then I ran into another friend who was like, she told me she was going to try for a VBA2C. And I was like, what are the odds that I have 2 people in my life right now within this little town that are like doing this or going for this? And this other friend was like 7 weeks ahead of me. So she was telling me all the things she was doing. And I started looking into it. And basically I was very intrigued. But I wasn't still confident that I wanted to do that. But I prayed a lot. My husband and I prayed a lot. We told nobody. And then around 28 weeks, I decided I'm going to go for it. So because I just always wanted to have the baby laid on my chest, like immediately, just never got that. I wanted that skin to skin and the umbilical cord to turn white, you know, all the things. So I hired a doula, North Dallas Doula Associates. I hired Melissa. She's fabulous. And then I started doing chiropractic at Cafe of Life in Dallas. They're amazing. And I started listening to y'all. I listened to every VBA2C or HBA2C or 3C, like all the things. I listened to everything. I basically consumed, I ate, drank, slept VBAC. And I started drinking the tea. I started eating the dates. At 34 weeks, I was, you know, trying. I was prepping my body, started really prepping. I feel like I became an expert in it. So then at 35 weeks, at 35 weeks, I go in and tell my doctor who delivered my other two that I want a VBAC. And I told her out of the blue, like I gave her no warning. And when I told her that, she turned red, like her face turned red. And I automatically knew like, okay, this isn't going to work. Because she was like, I wouldn't even know if I would say she's tolerant. Like it was less than tolerant, you know? You want friendly and supportive, and that was not going to be it for me. So I knew in that moment that I needed to get rid of her and go somewhere else. Because she was also saying I had a 10% chance of rupture. And I was like, that's made up. Like she didn't know all the research I'd done. But anyways, so I ended up getting into the VBAC doctor of like North Texas, probably. I went to him and he got me at 36 weeks. So I switched to him at 36 weeks, and his whole practice is known for VBACs, for successful VBACs and VBATCs. And he sat down with me and he talked about God in my consultation with him, which like doctors don't do. And so I really felt good about that. And that made me really comfortable, or gave me some comfort. And he said I'd be a perfect candidate. So he took me on to proceed with my prenatal care and everything, reassured me that the risk, he was like, the doctor that was telling you 10%, like, I don't know where she's getting that. It's like 1.3 to 1.5 after two C-sections. And like my spacing was good between pregnancies and everything. So I was like, great. So I made my birth preference, my birth preferences, not plan, but, I basically was like, I don't want meds. I don't want any interventions. I know I don't want to be touched. I want my body to do what it needs to do. And I knew my chances were higher, for success as long as I wasn't touched, basically. So I kind of, I went in at 39 weeks for like a prenatal induction massage. You know, I was like wanting to get things going, but I knew that was kind of like a fluky thing. But then my due date comes. I'm here on my due date. I'm 40 weeks. And I am at my checkup with my doctor. And he tells me at this 40-week appointment, it was on a Monday, he tells me that he leaves Saturday, this upcoming Saturday, for 11 days for a mission trip. And I was like, what? Okay, good for you. I'm glad you're doing a mission trip, but I felt panicked. He told me I'd be in good hands with someone from this practice, someone that would be supportive of my feedback. And when he checked me, that was the other thing. I wasn't wanting to do checks, but then at the same time, now that knowing he was leaving, I kind of wanted to know like where I was at, where my body was at labor wise. And so I went ahead and let him check me, and he told me, and I was just at a 1 and 20% -3 on my due date. So I went, and within like a couple of days, I did 4 rounds of acupuncture. Like one time I went in twice within one day because I don't know. I was like doing anything and everything. I was trying to get this baby to come naturally before he left town, my doctor. And I did two sets of the mile circuit, and I was just so determined to have this baby before he left. Then Wednesday comes, and I go back in for a membrane sweep, which was like my first, like, I know I shouldn't have done that, but I really wanted my doctor to be the one to deliver. So I went in for my membrane sweep, and I started having like the cramping, but I know that could have been false labor. But he checked me again, and I was at a 1 still, 50% and -2. So there was some change within those 2 days. And then I had a friend tell me, my friend actually that had her second VBAC after two C-sections, told me that she had a membrane sweep within 2 days, like within 24 hours. So I messaged my practice, and I was like, can I come in like tomorrow morning? And they're like, yeah. So I went in again and I had a membrane sweep that morning. That was my second membrane sweep. And then I was at 3 and 70% and a -2. So I'd made a little bit of change within the 24 hours. And then the doctor, he said, as he was leaving the room, he was like, hopefully I'll see you this evening. And I was like, yes. Mind you, he leaves in less than 48 hours from now. So I'm over here like, gotta do this little baby. Let's do this. So then Friday morning comes, still haven't had the baby. But the contractions start picking up. As the day goes on, they start getting more intense. Like I got in the shower to see if the water would help. And they were every 2 to 3 minutes for an hour. And my mom was like, I'm coming to get the kids. We had everything packed, like for everyone, like my kids, me, my husband, the baby and everything. So my mom comes to get the kids. We go to Dallas. It's like, you know, 30-minute drive. There was no traffic, luckily. We get to triage and they hook me up to continuous fetal monitoring, which was another thing I knew like to avoid. But at this point I was 40 and 5. Yeah. And my doctor's leaving he's going to be off within the next couple of hours. So then they check me and I was a 3, a 70, and a -2. So exactly what it was like the day before. Nothing happened, but I was having all these contractions. And then that's when things start going downhill. So at the triage, the hospitalist OB comes in and is like, have they not told you? Have they not told you about the doctor that's here? And I was like, no. And they were like, nobody from y'all's practice is here this entire weekend. They won't be back till Monday. The doctor that's on call for that whole practice is not for VBAC after 2 C-sections. She's only done VBAC after 1. And I was like, okay. I start like bawling, kind of panicking. My husband's sitting there like, what? I call my doula. She was baffled. She's in thousands. And she was like, I've never had this. Like, I've never been, this like wasn't an option. Like, this doesn't happen. Like, none of the doctors from the practice were going to be there. It was wild. They said, well, we'll have the doctor that's going to be here for them, for that practice. We'll have her come in and talk to you. And I knew mentally, I'm a mentally very, very tough person. Like if I say I'm going to do something, I'm really going to do something. It takes a lot for me to not do what I say I'm going to do. But this was mentally challenging in so many levels. But so the doctor comes in, the one that's on call for this practice that I moved to specifically to achieve this. She comes in and her verbiage is identical to my original OB that I fired. Thrown out, you know, rupture rate. She was literally saying, I have delivered dead babies from people like you. Like literally. And that's just not what I needed to hear. My husband, I kind of, this is all a blur because I'm in the middle of contracting this entire time. By this point, it was like every minute they were monitoring me. And one of the nurses came and they were like, are you okay? This is a lot. You're contracting a lot. Like, are you good? And I'm like, no, I'm not. But what am I supposed to do? Like, y'all are telling me I'm not. They're like, you need to go. So basically that doctor was like, you need to go back and have a C-section right now. And I was like, no. My husband was like, no, like he had to advocate for me more in this exact moment because of my mental. I was contracting and like trying to push through and get through mentally, just like the physical pain. But then I was having to like also grieve the idea of what I was about to lose like my experience of a VBAC and started just thinking, okay, this is not going to happen. Like, I'm going to have a C-section. This is insane. But my doula and I talked on the phone. My chiropractor was texting me, and they were like, you don't have to stay. Like, you don't have to do what they're saying. You're aware of your body. Like, you're aware of your baby's movements. Just track that, you know, stuff like that. I mean, we were baffled. Like, my doula was baffled. It was exhausting emotionally. But we ended up telling the hospital and the doctor. Marco, my husband, like, left, like, told her to leave. Like, leave. We need to process this. Because I was a mess. Like, I was crying so much. I feel like I could barely function. Almost to the point of where my contractions, I was so distracted. because I was just baffled. I don't know. There was no other words besides baffled. But we left. AMA. I had to sign papers. Because they were like, they just wanted me in the OR. And so we left. And went to the hospital, I mean, the hotel right next door. And I labored there all night long. My contractions did not stop. Nothing stopped. There was the bloody show started coming real hardcore, everything. My husband fell asleep. Luckily, there was no sleeping. I hadn't slept that whole night. So by now I was like 24 hours of no sleep, if not more. I think it was a little bit more. So, but yeah, I got in the shower there. I was sitting on the toilet. I was just praying, please be dilating, please. You know, I was doing the toilet tricks and everything. And it was mentally like one of the toughest nights because I just felt like I was losing my shot to do it.
Taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula.
And so Saturday morning comes, and now I know my doctor's definitely, he's out. Like, he's on an airplane now. Like, there's no chance that he finds this out and comes to me or helps her anyway. He's gone for sure. But I wake up Saturday morning, or I didn't wake up, but because I never fell asleep. But Saturday morning, things started slowing down. And my contractions slowed down. I could still feel the baby movement and all the things, but my contractions were less frequent and less intense. And I was like, what on earth is happening? So I called my doula. I felt in my gut that my brain told my body that I wasn't safe to do what I wanted. And my labor stalled, I guess. And I called my doula and I asked, and she was like, that's absolutely possible. Because I have nobody to advocate for me. Like, you know, as a doula, you can't, you're like here to support me, you know? But like, can't medically tell the other people. I'm the only person that can sign off on things, you know? And I'm over here starting to feel mentally weaker. And my poor doula was trying so hard to get somebody in for my practice. She was calling and she was trying to move things around. It was wild. But anyway, so we're still at the hotel. Everything calms down. She's like, you can probably go home, see how you feel in like your own environment, relaxed and everything. And so we do. We go home, call my mom. Everyone's just confused and like, what's going on? My kids come back And I'm here, I'm home probably for a couple of hours, and then things start picking up again like they had been before. And my mom is at my house and she's like, Derby, you need to go back to the hospital. Like, I'm watching you and it's making me hurt because you are in labor right now, because that's how bad it got again. So we did our 30-minute drive back, and now we're like maybe needing to go back already. But I wasn't ready to go back there just yet. Mentally, it felt like my gut was telling me just like, let's wait a little bit longer. By now I'd had over 24 hours of contractions, despite some of that was slowed down. But so we're here with my kids, my mom's here. And then my doula and my chiropractor suggests maybe I just go do a wellness check on baby at any hospital nearby, just to make sure. Oh, we didn't know what the baby was, by the way, yet. So I was going to say he, cause it's a boy, surprise. But, the baby, we wanted to go check. So we went to the hospital just like 5 minutes away. My contractions are amped back up, very intense. Can't breathe, like can't talk through them. I'm like having to focus, you know, it's back and it's like almost back worse than ever. So I'm there in their triage at labor and delivery. And that doctor there was like, they checked me again. So here I am. They checked me and I was at a 3 still. A 70 still and a negative 2 still. So all of that I had went through that whole night before did nothing. And that was really discouraging. So the doctor at this hospital was like, she was like, you're not about to drive, are you? And I was like, no, my husband's with me. Like, we came together. He's sitting right there. And she's like, y'all need to go to the hospital right now, like where you're going to deliver, or I can do it here right now. You need to go have a C-section. And I was like, okay, we'll drive to the hospital. Like, leave. We're leaving. Bye. This doctor was very not personable. She didn't have good bedside manner, I'd say. So we left. We were there for probably 2 hours. Oh, the night before when we were in triage, we were there for 6 hours fighting. Those people, like that Friday before we went to the hotel, we were there for 6 hours at the hospital. Just to give you reference for how exhausted I was. But yeah, anyways, so Saturday, yeah, we leave that second triage, come back home, and my mom went ahead and left with the kids again. I tried laboring at home for a little bit, get in the bathtub, all the things, water, all the things. At this point, I was like unable to drink. I couldn't do anything. I was so in so much pain. And then Saturday night, because they were every 30 seconds by this point. Like, it was very, very fast. It was brutal. Wow. But we decide, my husband's like, okay, I think we need to go back. So we drive back to Dallas. It's 8:30 p.m. We drive back to Dallas. And I feel like in the car, I was about to pass out the whole time. I don't hardly remember it. My husband told me later that he was going 100. And my doula was on the phone. She said she was listening to my contractions. And she was like, yeah, this is real. You need to be there. So we get there, they admit me to labor and delivery. And, my doula meets us there. And I was, when we got to labor and delivery, they could tell I was really weak because it had been almost 48 hours by now. And I hadn't slept either in like 2 days. And I was, my lips were cracked and dry. And I was like, I could hardly like lift my arms. I was so weak. And so my doula comes and she's like, Darby, because I didn't want an epidural or anything. But she was like, Darby, there is zero chance you push this baby out with how exhausted and weak you are unless you get an epidural and you're able to rest for a little bit. And I was like, okay, I trust that. I trust you. And thank goodness she said that, because it worked. But I get that. Well, I had four different nurses tried four different veins, enrolled four different veins to get me hooked up to saline bags because that's how dehydrated I was. I was rolling veins everywhere. I mean, afterwards, like I was bruised for weeks. My arms were like beat up. So they placed my saline. They did my epidural, my catheter, all the things. They said there were ketones in my urine, all the things. I was like severely dehydrated. Like I was probably an hour from needing to go just have like an emergency C-section probably. And so they placed the epidural and I think for 6 hours, they were, you know, turning me on my side every time or like every hour to make sure the epidural was staying and like staying, you know, equal or whatever. Well, it never was. It was only like bilateral. It was only on my left side and I felt my contractions on my right side for 6 hours because I told them that. And, but they were like, okay, let's just keep moving you and see if it'll flip. But then like the doctor came in and was like, hey, the baby's not tolerating your contraction. So if this happens much longer, we're going to have to take you back. And I was like, okay, that's fine. If there's a medical necessity, like if it's me or baby, like obviously take me back. That is 100%. I'm okay with that. Like those 2 days before when the doctors were like, we're just going to take you back. They had no medical reason, you know, at that point. But so when the doctor said that, I was like, okay, obviously, just keep me posted on the baby. I will go back there ASAP. I want my baby. So then they come in and like tweak my epidural. And they're like, okay, this should fix it. So they, I think they pulled it out a tap it to like see if it would work more. And it didn't. I think 2 hours went by and it still didn't. And I told them again, so they come and take it out fully and then have to replace it fully. So like it's really 3 times they had to do my epidural. And then it finally worked and I got to relax for like, I think I fell asleep for maybe an hour and a half or two. So this was Saturday night, goes into like 4 or so a.m. Sunday morning. I'm now 41 weeks on to the day at this point. And in my head, I'm like, I'm going to be in this hospital till tomorrow morning, like Monday, when my practice doctors are able to be in here. But then I was also like, I hope my baby can handle this for that long because this is a lot. Like, this is a lot for both of us. And I knew my chances were shot, basically. So I mentally was like preparing for a C-section at this point because it's been 36 hours, almost 40. It had been like 48 hours of contractions and I knew that that wasn't very good for the baby. Then Sunday morning, after sleeping for like an hour and a half or two, a nurse comes in. And right behind her comes in a doctor from the practice, like my practice, that wasn't supposed to be there. She wasn't supposed to be there. And I started bawling. I grabbed my husband's hand and I was like, okay, this is God. Like I felt it and it makes me emotional still. But so she walks in and I was like, this is my angel. This is my moment. Oh my gosh. I can't believe this. Why are you here? You're not supposed to be here. What's happening? I was so excited. I felt like, okay, here's my chance. It's still going to happen. It was like 7 a.m. She walks in. They tell me that she had an induction that came up or something that she went on for. And I was just so, I was like, thank you for needing to go and do somebody else because here I am. But she comes in, she was like, hey, your baby's not tolerating your contractions very well. We either need to break your water or you need to have a C-section. And I was like, Oh my gosh. If you're saying this, then I believe it. I trust it. I know I'm going to go with whatever she says because she comes from a practice that wants vaginal. They always want vaginal first. Like, so I trusted that. So I started crying again. At this point, I'm like emotionally, physically, mentally exhausted in every aspect of life, like so exhausted. She talked to me about Aram, and I knew that was another thing. Like, I didn't want epidural. I didn't want a membrane sweep. I didn't want to break my water. All the things. But everything was going out the door. Like, my plan, my preferences were gone, obviously, by now. Like, gone. So she talked to me about the Aram and the main risk being, like, a less than 1% chance of cord prolapse. And that scared me half to death. I was like, what on earth? I was crying so much. I literally was like, I just need to have a C-section in my head. I was like telling myself like, okay, I was praying the whole time. Just like, give me peace about the C-section I'm about to have and help me let go of this idea that I was gonna have my baby vaginally. But then my husband, he made a point that I'm so thankful for because at this point, the poor guy too was so tired. But he told me we're already risking 1.3% chance of rupture. I'm sorry. We're already risking 1.3 chance of rupture going for a VBAC. That's a minuscule risk. This is just one more other small risk. Let's go for it. Like, you can do this. If anyone can do this, you can do this. That's what he was telling me. And I was like, oh gosh, okay. I guess you're right. So I went for the water, broke the water. There was meconium, which I was like, no. And I immediately dilated 2 centimeters. So I went from a 3 to a 5, like in that exact moment. And my doctor was like, okay, we have to place an IUPC now. And I was like, what? Another thing that I never wanted, which at this point I'm like, whatever, my plan is just gone. But yeah, she was like, we have to place the IUPC in just so we can be extra cautious, since baby was already showing signs of distress. And I was like, okay. So
let's talk about what an IUPC is for a second. Is that okay? Yes. So an IUPC, Women of Strength, if you don't know, is an inner uterine pressure catheter that goes in next to baby's head. It is not the clip that goes on their head, and that's not a clip either. But an IUPC measures the strength of your contractions, so it helps us to know how frequently you're contracting to actually measure and put, like, measurements to measure and put measurements behind your contraction strength. And this is helpful because then they know what you're doing, right? Because at this point, we know maybe how frequently you're contracting based on those monitors, but we don't know how powerful they are. And so sometimes it's helpful to know what those are. So that is different than the thing that they put, which is the fetal scalp electrode that measures their heart rate. And that is a little kind of little screw that goes in the top of their head. And that's a little scary. But both are sometimes interventions that are needed. But also it's scary to have something like brought your way. Mm-hmm. So they place IUPC mm-hmm. and then what happens?
Mm-hmm. And I automatically was like, oh my gosh, infection, you know, my brain is like, they checked me multiple times. And now an IUPC. My risk of infection is like skyrocketing every single time they touch me. I'm like, I'm just like, oh my gosh. It was the mental game was just next level. So anyways, she placed it and she was like, let's just see how you do. Try and rest. I'll come back and check you. We're going to monitor the baby. She comes back in about 3 hours later and checked me and said I was only 1 more centimeter. So I went from a 5 to a 6 now. But she did say that baby was tolerating my contractions well with no more hard D cells. And that if I wanted, I could try a low and slow Pitocin. And here I am again. I'm like, oh my gosh, seriously. I never wanted Pitocin, you know. But then she was like, if, because I knew Pitocin of all things is like, that really ups your chance of uterine rupture, because it's like artificial contractions, or like makes them more intense, you know, maybe more than my body's ready. So I really was like, oh my gosh, like I knew literally everything about all these, the IUPC, all of the checks, all the Pitocin, the epidural, all the risks to everything. And everything was just going out the door. It was funny though, looking back. But so I agreed to the low and slow Pitocin, because she was like, if baby tolerates it well, then we'll amp it up and just pray that my body responds well to it. So I said, okay, what's one more thing at this point? Like, I'm doing all these things. It had been almost three days by now. So I had Pitocin going for an hour and a half, and at the lowest dose, which I was like, very like, please keep it as low as possible. So she came back in and I was complete and ready to push. And my husband was out when she did that. He was out grabbing food. The poor man hadn't eaten in a long time either. I brought him snacks. Like, I packed him snacks and all the things, and it wasn't enough. Like, he needed some legit food. So he ran to grab food. But that's when she came in and was like, okay, you're ready. So I called my husband, or I don't even know where my phone was, but someone got it. A nurse got it for me. I tried calling him. He didn't answer. And then I called my doula and she's like, I'm coming. But then my husband runs in. He's like, I didn't even get my food. It's still there. Like, he didn't get to eat, which is fine. But so anyways, I started pushing, and I was pushing for 45 minutes, and I had an 8-pound, 9-ounce baby, 20 and a half inches long, and about a third degree tear that they stitched up there while I was holding my baby on my chest immediately. My husband got to cut the cord after it turned white, and that was the redemptive part that I needed, because everything else was a fight, and it was the most intense and probably the most traumatizing medical experience of my life. But the end, that ending of having and finding out it was a boy, that was so exciting, because now I have my girl, my boy. It was everything. I felt like so at peace with what I did and how I don't know. I felt stronger after that, because I had to advocate. My husband and I got closer in those 3 days because he had to advocate for me and, you know, be my head, like, be my mental strength, because I was losing it. But it was the most empowering thing ever. And I'm just so glad I did it, because I wouldn't have gotten through it without my research and without my doula, the chiropractor, the nurse, and my doula during pushing, after I'd pushed and everything. They were like, because I told them how, like, I'm a big workout, like, I love working out and going to the gym. And afterwards, they're like, you did this because you had been working out. And I was like, I don't know about that. Like, that's not why I was working out, but I'm glad I did, because I think that did make a big difference too. But yeah.
Wow. What a ride. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So that's a lot to process. That's a lot that happened.
Yeah.
And you talked about how you had postpartum depression with your second. Uh-huh. What was that recovery like, both with the tearing and then emotionally too?
Yeah. I didn't have postpartum depression this time. My breastfeeding journey was so much better. The tear was obviously painful, but I'd say nothing like a C-section. Like, my C-section, I don't know. C-section recovery is a beast. So I just did not want to have to deal with that, especially with dealing with two toddlers. So I would say the recovery was like night and day. And mentally, emotionally, postpartum was just night and day, especially because I felt so empowered. Like, I felt so redemptive. And honestly, like, I felt closer to God too after it. And I just felt at peace with everything. So it's been, I'm only 6 months postpartum right now, but I felt, I still feel like this has been by far my best postpartum.
Oh, that's so great. Especially with three little ones.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of stressors in your life,
yeah.
But that high that you're able to ride from feeling empowered and like you showed up for yourself so well, that's so incredible. Okay, I have a question. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for other women of strength in our community for this mental fortitude that you had, just like navigating a complete rug pulled out from under you with switching provider? Like, first of all, switching providers at what, 36
yeah.
weeks, you said?
Yeah.
And then in the middle of labor, and then nobody from the practice. And then, oh my gosh, like
yeah.
there was so much and just like physical exhaustion. How did you, yeah, what advice do you have?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I had my A team set up, which was my biggest thing, like for success for me. I thought that was my biggest thing. So I think I had like, I would, and then the main one being the doctor gone, like I had to fall back onto God and pray through it. That's like my only, my answer. Like, it just have to be prayer. I don't know. There was no other way I could have gotten through that without the strength of God giving me, like, I guess it was just God giving me the strength to do it, because I had time after time after time, like, chances to just give up or to say, okay, you're right. And I just kept pushing, which is partially probably, yeah, I just had to let go. I like had to literally, like, I know it's cliche, I had to like let go and let God, but I was going with my gut, and my gut kept saying, you know, you're good, like keep going. I'm pretty hard-headed though, so it's like also just within my nature, I'm pretty hard-headed. When I say I'm gonna do something, I'm like, I have to do it. And I really also really wanted to go and tell my doctor, my other doctor, like, ha, look at me.
Yeah, girl.
I don't know, but I didn't. But I didn't do that.
I had a moment like that during my VBAC too, that I had had someone say something really unkind about my VBAC journey. And I remember like the rage of like, watch me.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a, okay.
You need it sometimes.
Haters gonna hate, and I'm gonna show you what I got.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't want a lot of people to know what I was doing either, because of that reason. Like, any negative or even just like, you know, type of comments, like, I didn't want
sure.
that. So we literally kept it so on the down low, which also helped, I'd say.
So I have a question. When you went back to the hospital that last time before you got your epidural and before that doctor from your practice came back, what was that situation then like returning back to that hospital? Were they still telling you needed a cesarean, or like before, like when you got your epidural place, were they like more supportive?
No.
What did that shift?
Yeah, that doctor that saw me in triage the night before came back in again, and she was like, I know you probably don't want to see me. And my husband was like, yeah, no, we don't. Like, we don't want to hear what you have to say. We already know what you have to say. My doula was there at the time, and she told me like on the side, she was like, I'm going to go talk to her in the hallway. And then she came back in. My doula came back in after and told me what she said. But she came back in and said, my doula told that doctor, she wants to not be touched. She needs positivity, and she needs you to not come in unless like there's something going on in the monitor. I need you to leave her alone. And she was like, okay, I'll leave her alone. That's what my doula came in and told me. And I was like, oh, thank you. That was the time where my doula really had to go in to advocate for me. After like my husband and I had to advocate for ourselves like so much. But she did come in. She did come in right then and was like, I know you don't want to see me again, but you know, I know you need to go back and have a C-section, like I was telling you last night. And I was like, I know. No. Like,
good for you. I just think it's so powerful, Darby, that like, no is a complete sentence. Uh-huh. And even in our medical care, and even if someone is saying you have to do this, the answer is I don't actually have to do anything that I don't want to do because this is my body and this is my baby. And I'm just like, it's inspiring, truly.
Thank you.
So inspiring. And there's so much that we can take away from this as to like, listen to that part inside of you when you don't feel good about something and honor that. And you did that so well, honoring it and listening to it and continuing with it. You had your A team that stays with you through all of these provider changes, location changes. That's why doula care husbands are so like important to know what you want, because when you are exhausted, and we don't know how long your labor is going to go, but if it ends up being into 2-3 days and you don't have the strength to advocate, this is when your A team comes through for you. Talking about, we talk in the military a lot about spiritual fitness, and you have physical fitness, being so strong physically to have that endurance, but also spiritual fitness to have something that grounds you. And when you don't know what the way ahead is going to be, having something that can carry you through in a faith-filled way, like, I think that's so important to be grounded that way. And just, yeah, there's so many nuggets. And even like, it's not too late to switch your providers. So take note. And also, as you're looking for providers, take note of Darby's wild ride and how her provider navigated that, the things that she suggested. You can take away these things and ask providers, like, how would you handle different readings on the monitors? Like, when do you suggest an IUPC? When do you do these things? And so you can see how a provider really supports a vaginal delivery or a VBA 2C, or what that actually means, versus when a lot of providers say, yes, we support vaginal delivery, and then manage them quite differently than others. So, anyway, thank you, Darby. Is there anything else you want to say to our community? We're so thankful that you came and shared your incredible story with us.
I thank y'all so much, because I literally give so much of the credit to y'all and the stories you put out there, because I learned the VBAC Link podcast was my main source of knowledge on like what to and what not to do. Like, I learned so much from people's stories. So I was so excited when y'all chose mine, because I know you get hundreds, and my husband was like, you need to send it in. Like, they taught you. And I was like, no. And then when y'all chose mine, he was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. But I hope my story can help someone, even if it's just one person. I hope my story can help others. Like, all y'all's other stories have helped me.
It will.
Oh, thank you so much, Darby. Yeah.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.